Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1, action.
Assume nothing.
Rash, bald-faced blasphemy.
Question everything.
I find it extremely hard to imagine.
Open your eyes.
It is quite all right to be an atheist.
The fastest growing group of people in the country has been measured as being those who have no belief or who are atheists.
You don't have to be apologetic or quiet about it.
Challenge the opposition.
You see religion on 100 fronts losing the argument.
And start thinking. This is The Thinking Atheist Worldwide.
Today's broadcast is brought to you by NatureBox. Unbox the goodness at NatureBox with over 100 delicious and healthy snacks that you choose online, and then they deliver those snacks right to your front door. Act now, get your first box of NatureBox snacks on them. Just go to this website, go to naturebox.com/thinkingatheist. naturebox.com/thinkingatheist. I had originally scheduled for the broadcast today a conversation between myself and atheist minister Greta Vosper. Yeah, I know you're stuck on those two words just like I was when I first heard them. Minister, what are you doing, Greta? Greta is the minister of West Hill United Church, Toronto, Canada. She's been an atheist for a long, long time. An outspoken atheist for several years, and her congregation is okay with this. Well, apparently, some folks in the United Church of Canada have finally gotten wind of this through a series of events and are now considering her removal as minister. The congregation's not happy. They want Greta to hang on and stay there. Greta wants to keep her position. She wants to remain a minister. And yet a lot of people think, what's an atheist doing behind the pulpit in a Methodist church? And it's a damn good question. So I'm going to present that question directly to Greta. She's going to join me on the radio next Tuesday as we talk about, what the hell are you doing in a Methodist, in a Christian establishment, if you are an atheist? If I was on the board, wouldn't it make sense that I wanted you booted out as well? What are you trying to accomplish? What's the temperature of the congregation on this whole scenario? What's going on in Toronto, Canada, at West Hill United Church? That's going to be next Tuesday's broadcast. It should be an interesting discussion. And the reason I've moved the interview with Greta a week is because I had this sort of last-second opportunity to be able to interview Penn Jillette, and I couldn't pass it up. Also, and I just wanted to bring this up real fast, because Penn and I take a second and talk a little bit about James Randi during our discussion. James Randi's documentary, An Honest Liar, Truth and Deception, James the Amazing Randi, is now streaming on Netflix. I know that they had released it on iTunes and Amazon Instant Video and some other places. It's out on DVD in a few spots. It had a limited theater run. But now it's streaming. It's on Netflix. And so if you subscribe, search for it, because it's a wonderful, wonderful film. It's called An Honest Liar. And it is the story of James Randi. It is absolutely inspiring. Tonight's broadcast features an interview that I conducted actually a couple of days ago with Penn Jillette, half of the hugely popular duo Penn and Teller. They had scheduled a time for us to be able to hook up. It was not on our normal broadcast time, and so he and I actually did a Google Hangout. There is a video version of this, about 35-minute interview. I'll put the link in the description box of this show, or you can just go on YouTube and search it, Seth Andrews Interviews Penn Jillette, and you can kind of see the webcam thing that we had going on. Hugely gracious guy, and I felt like it was an interesting conversation. Just a few questions I'd always wanted to ask him, and I had the opportunity, and hopefully it's entertaining for the listeners. Because he used a Skype microphone, the audio quality is not perfect, but it is what it is. You can certainly hear what he's saying, but it's also very roomy because his webcam was what was picking up the source of his audio. You'll also hear a series of tones from time to time because I think he had his email browser up or something. So in mid-sentence, you'll hear a ding. You know, bear with those. There's several of those during the conversation. And at one point, and you'll see this in the video version, I was trying to adjust a camera on my side, And Penn, in the middle of an answer to one of my questions, just totally detoured and started talking about me adjusting all the gear and whatnot. So when you hear him do that, I was actually trying to get a camera adjustment made while he was finishing the answer. One thing about radio, you can do that. Nobody knows. On video, I'm right there with my hand on the screen. And Penn picked up on that and just ran with it. So that's what he's talking about. I think it happens near the 10-minute mark, something like that. Before we get started, take a second sometime today and browse the NatureBox website. Just log on, look around, check it out. What you're going to find is a clean and fun website, populated with over 100 different snack options, full of flavor, healthier ingredients that skip the junk, and it's a great solution for those times when the cravings strike, and we all know how that feels. It's goodness without the guilt. For my part, I set up my delivery with a couple of favorites, same thing every month. I'm in love right now with the Honey Macadamia Pretzel Pops. Natalie and I are both fans of the roasted Peruvian corn kernels, so we get those every month. Then the other options, we just mix up. And since NatureBox adds new snacks every month, there's always something new to try. Plus, they have the Smart Snack Guarantee, so if something doesn't ring your bell, fine, they'll replace it in your next month's box. Improve the way you snack and get your first box on them when you act today. Log on to naturebox.com/thinkingatheist. naturebox.com/thinkingatheist. Penn Jillette is half of the hugely popular duo Penn and Teller. He is a magician, a juggler, a musician. He plays the bass. And he's, of course, a proud atheist. He was born in Greenfield, Massachusetts. He caught the bug for performing magic at an early age, and he met his partner, Teller, back in 1974. They officially became Penn and Teller in 1981. Penn and Penn and Teller have been featured on Saturday Night Live, The Tonight Show, Conan O'Brien, Letterman, The Daily Show, Fear Factor, The West Wing, Futurama, The Apprentice, The Simpsons, The Muppets, even Babylon 5. They hosted 8 seasons on the Showtime television series Bullshit, and we'll get to that during the interview. They've been featured in music videos by the Ramones, Run DMC, and even Katy Perry. They have a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, just a few steps from the star of Harry Houdini. And of course, they have the signature show in Las Vegas at the Rio Casino. They are doing an evening of magical inquiry September the 18th at ApostaCon in Dallas, Texas. Details at apostacon.org. And I believe there are still tickets available for that event. apostacon.org. This is my conversation with Penn Jillette. Back when I was still a believer, and I mean, I wasn't a fundamentalist, but I was still a believer in God. I called myself dormant in the faith. It's when, you know, I don't really believe it, but there's something out there kind of a deal. And I caught you at the Rio and I saw you say something about God and you weren't kind. I mean, you were very bold. It was obvious you were a non-believer. You were a skeptic. And I remember that it just hit me in the chest, like, oh, you know, holy shit, this guy doesn't believe in God, and he's pretty bold about it. And I actually had this feeling of sort of grief for you. Like, I'm so sorry that you don't know the love of Jesus kind of thing. And it's funny because I had an amazing time. It's an amazing show. You know, you did the bullet catch. You know, it just blew my mind. Do you take a lot of heat for that during those shows? Do people send you letters or say anything whenever you're out greeting after the show's over?
You know, we first started doing Bullshit. I say with a great deal of shame that I pitched it a little cynically. I pitched it with the idea that, well, even if people hate us and we get hate mail, you'll still get attention, which I now find repulsive, but I did that. And when we did our first shows, and the first shows of Bullshit were some of the heaviest. We did Talking to the Dead, we did the Bible, we did creationism, we did afterlife, we covered a lot of that. The mail did start rolling in. And what astonished me and what humbled me and what shamed me was that most of the letters were so, so very kind. They said stuff like, I'm a believer. I believe that Jesus Christ is our Lord. I hope you can find the joy that I found. But I like your show and I like your passion And I like your honesty and thank you for doing that. And I went, oh, so they're not just monsters out there. Now, there's a temptation whenever you are an outspoken atheist. And I had this conversation with Richard Dawkins. I've had it with Trey Parker of South Park, who's, by the way, not an atheist, but I still have this discussion with him, where you kind of brag about your hate mail. You know, this is the letter I got from this idiot who said he was going to kill me and my whole family. Here's the letter I got from. And I realized that that is an unfair way to have the discussion, because crazy people, people who cannot function in our society without a great deal of hate and violence, are off the bell curve. And they do not represent Christians. They do not represent atheists. You know, they represent people who have serious emotional and psychological problems. So now I try to realize that, to live in a pluralistic society, there has to be room for people who are believing and discovering. And I would have welcomed you if you'd seen me before the show and said, you know, Ben, I'm a dormant Christian. I still believe there's something out there. Do you want me to come to your show? I would have said, yeah, come on by. You'll see what it looks like and feels like for someone who is out of the closet atheist. But also, I want to have this discussion. I want to be part of that. I think that the idea of the answer to bad speech is more speech is really, really important. And I got slapped upside the head by bullshit, by kindness. Because, you know, anger and hate may take you aback, but kindness can fucking knock you on your ass.
So now, whenever you're lampooning the Bible, the damn Bible is in bullshit, and you're just having a heyday with it, is that liberating? I mean, does that feel pretty good? Like the stuff they used to frighten us with, the monster in the closet, eternal hell, whatever, the eye in the sky. Now you're like, oh, yeah, screw that. And you just lampoon it. Is there a liberation in that?
Once again, many, many atheists talk about their fundamentalist upbringing and how they're rebelling against that. I'm really not rebelling against anything. The people at our church were wonderful and kind. And the religion that I had, my family was Congregationalist, you know, the Church of the Covered Dish Supper in New England. There wasn't a lot of fire and brimstone. The people at the church were good people. So there is a liberating quality, but I would say it stated it more in the positive than the negative. I like when I do that trashing of the Bible. I like the celebration of life right here. You know, I wrote a book called Every Day is an Atheist Holiday, and it's really what I believe. I really believe that every day is an atheist holiday. We really are celebrating. Nice hand. Want me to read your poem?
Sorry about that. I'm adjusting something while you chat. I'm totally listening.
But I was going to say, you have a very long lifeline. You're going to meet someone very important to your life. I see from looking at your palm, you're walking with the other children, but you somehow feel separate. I see you as someone who has a lot of success, but still wants to work more and work harder. I see you as someone who is kind, but sometimes gets wrangled. Go ahead. I was just doing the basic palm reading.
I went to a psychic last year just on a lark. It was my birthday present. And we had been doing some reading about cold reading and the tactics they use to make you think, oh, wow, these people know so much about me. So you're in the business of fooling people. Mm-hmm. And you look around like James Randi and a whole lot of other people, and you think, hey, these folks they're selling not just entertainment, they're selling truth with a capital T, often to the tune of hundreds, perhaps thousands of dollars. And does that kick up a fire in your belly? I mean, does it piss you off? Do you want to go out there and pull a Randi and just expose everybody? What's going on?
Well, we do. We worked with Randi. I mean, since I was 18, I've worked with Randi. And very closely, he's our hero. He's our mentor. He's our friend. He's our guiding light. You know, but something happened. You know, I used to, you know, reading Houdini and listening to Randi and reading all of Randi's books, I had this intellectual sense that doing the psychic stuff was morally wrong. And I was indignant about it, and I was very outspoken about it. And then the first day of 2000, my mom died. And I added to the intellectual element, I also added an emotional element. if you wanted me to detail the most important things I have in my life, right up near the top, very near the top, would be the memories I have of my mother and father. Those memories are so important to me. The memory, the model, if you will, of my mom that I carry around in my head. Because as an atheist, I can still have conversations with my mom in my head. I have that model I built of her my whole life, the whole life we have that overlapped. The 45 years my mom and I have that overlapped. I have this model I built of her. And when I think about going to a psychic and that psychic telling me stuff about my mom that distorts my memory, even the slightest bit, I can't think of anything more hateful than that. So strangely, when my mom died, my attacking of psychics came down a little bit because the fun went away. I was overwhelmed by the hate you have to have for somebody to think that you know more about how they should grieve than they do. The absolute disrespect you have for the dead to think that you can speak for them. That all became so real. It was quite a horrible moment. They booked me on Politically Incorrect with Bill Maher, Bill Maher's show Before Real Time, which I was a guest the first week and the last week. I'm the only one who was. I was with Bill the whole time. And they would book me on against religious people and against psychics and put them on the thing. And I was always a great deal of fun. And I was outspoken and aggressive, and I was mean, and it made for good television. And shortly after my mom died, like within weeks, through no fault of anyone, they booked me on Politically Incorrect. And they booked me with a psychic. And it came time for us to interact. And it was a terrible TV appearance because what had been before a smart-ass pen making fun of these people doing this silly thing now became a man just sitting there full of hate, full of sadness, and right on the verge of crying. So, Penn, what do you think about that? That's what they got for television. And afterwards, you know, everybody was very kind. They apologized to me. You know, we should not have had you on this show so shortly after your mom died to talk to someone who talks to the dead. But of course, there was the other part of that. We shouldn't have you on this show and then not spoken, but also thought because you sucked.
Let's get back to bullshit for just a second. I know you've been asked this before, but I have to ask it again. Because they're very rewatchable. They're like Mythbusters and a bunch of other shows along that vein. You can watch them and see them, and they're entertaining the second, third, fourth, fifth time. And every time I see these people who are pitching, you know, crystals and woo, and they're doing their dances and songs and whistling and talking to UFOs and whatever, I'm saying out loud, how did you get them to sign on the dotted line to appear on a show called Bullshit when they had to have known in advance they were about to be just ridiculed and roasted by the host? I mean, you're brutal. Did they know it was coming?
Well, here's the thing. I say with a great deal of pride that Bullshit was honest, was true, but very, very biased. We were the most biased show on TV, but we were also fair. So fair and biased, which is what I want out of all reporting. I want someone to come on the news and go, good evening, I hate President Obama, and here's the news. Once I know you're biased, it becomes very, very easy. You know, newspapers used to be called, like, you know, the Iowa Republican. And you knew when you picked up that paper what you were getting. We're getting back to that now. News sources are biased, and I like that, as long as they're fair. So we tried to make sure that every person who was on Bullshit was told the show is called Bullshit. Here's a DVD of another show they did. And oh, by the way, you're the bad guy. When we finally got to doing the show, we did not ambush anybody. I mean, I'd like to think our show is very different than Michael Moore and very different than Borat. People are not ambushed with a hidden camera. People are not put on under false pretenses. They know what they're getting into. That having been said, and I think this is the most important thing, if you were doing a Christian bullshit show, if there were two Christian hosts and they were doing the bullshit of atheism and they asked me to be on the show and they said, we're going to rip you apart, the question I would say is, are you going to be fair? Will I get to state what I believe honestly? Then afterwards, you call me an asshole. Then afterwards, you rip my arguments apart. Will I be able to state what I want to state? And if their answer was yes, and if I were treated like the people were treated on bullshit, I would do it. Because we let people speak their minds. I'll also add, in a slightly less idealistic and a slightly more cynical point of view, that everyone who was on that show did better business-wise afterwards than they did before.
I actually did get the impression from many of them that even after you just destroyed them, they were still high-fiving themselves because they'd made national television.
Sure. And the other thing we did that other people I don't think do is we tried to make them look. I was very, we didn't keep this up all the time. I'm talking about our ideal. And, you know, your listeners will be able to look through and find counterexamples to this. I'm talking about the ideal, what I was trying for. And I fail in everything I try, but, you know, you still try. We tried to make sure they kind of sort of look good, and we attacked them for what they were thinking and saying and not for who they were. We had one guy on the UFO show who had was very, very unattractive. He had very goofy teeth that were almost cartoony. And the first edit we saw had all these shots of him stating his case, and then I was coming back and making fun of him. And we could not find an angle where he looked good. We had him walking in with his mouth shut, and he looked kind of okay. And I will say with a great deal of pride that I think many other shows would have played up this goofy, and forgive me for using a slightly racist term, this goofy hillbilly is believing this stuff. Smart people never were. And I didn't think that was fair, so we ended up using his talking over footage of UFOs and so on, and then I tore apart what he said and not who he was. Now, when you go through the shows, you will find I make fun of one Christian woman's hat, which if I had my time back, I wouldn't have done. Now, the people who we agreed with, Nick Gillespie of Reason Magazine, who's an atheist and a writer, who we would have on four or five shows on our side, I ripped him apart for everything. How he was dressed, how his jeans looked. You know, he would always write to me after the shows and go, Jesus, being on your side is fucking brutal. I said, yeah, well, I can't make fun of them for how they look, but I sure can make fun of you for how you look. And you know, Christopher Hitchens, who is one of my biggest heroes, was a very, very good friend. We rip him the fuck apart for having the drink in his hand and all of that. So we got people to go on the show. First of all, people turned us down. Second of all, cynically, they did better. Third of all, we treated them fairly. And fourth of all, I never was the one who explained to them what show they were on. I know what orders we gave, but I also know that someone in the field might have said, you're on a show called Bullshit. You know, I don't know when that was done. I haven't had anybody report that. No one has ever come forward and said we were on under false pretenses, but I just don't want to appear that we do things perfectly that couldn't possibly have been done perfectly.
It's a great show. I love the irreverence. I love the angle. I love the fact that you cram a lot of info into a short amount of time. I love the fact that you don't seem afraid of a lot of these quote-unquote sacred cows, right? People, when people take a belief personally, it becomes interwoven with their identity. And that's, in many cases, supposedly gives them a pass, right? Hey, why would you attack this? It makes me so happy. And yet bullshit does that. You know, it just says, well, hang on, let's forget how we feel about it and let's take a look at the data. Very well done.
That's one of the reasons we're really excited to go to ApostaCon, because normally when we appear a little more guarded. And when we feel like we're among friends, we feel like, you know, when Teller and I accept an award at the Magic Castle, we have a little tradition And we go to the magic castle, we're speaking to strictly magicians. Teller does all the talking and I don't speak. There's a little sense that here we are not in our public personas, but here we are in a different persona to you from magicians. In the ApostaCon, we do that same kind of thing. Teller's going to be speaking, not exclusively. I may say a thing or two, and we'll open it up to questions. It's funny, but when we play for an audience of Christians, audience of the religious, their questions are always respectful and very, very kind. We go in front of atheist groups and skeptics. We expect to be ripped to pieces. They will point out every single thing we did on bullshit that was wrong, which incidentally, myriad. There's many, many things we had wrong, many things that we've changed on over the years, and many, many things were just simply wrong at the time.
So I've got the book here, which was published by Simon & Schuster back in 2011, 2012. God No, right? Mm-hmm. In the book, you say some obviously inflammatory things. It's a hugely entertaining book, but you're pretty hard on agnostics. There's a chapter that says, agnostics, no one can know for sure, but I believe they're full of shit. Okay, let's just start there. Agnostics are copping out? What do you think?
Well, you know, I make this after the headline. I make it a little bit clear. I think there's partially copping out. It's also possibly, I believe it's a misuse of terms. Agnostic, the root, deals with epistemology. It's how we ascertain truth. An atheist deals with what we believe. So I believe that everyone, virtually everyone, is agnostic. But if you don't know, you don't believe. So as soon as a person says, I don't know about Jesus, they've automatically said they're an atheist. It answers two different questions. If I say, do you know whether there's a God or not? And you answer no, then you are an agnostic. If I say, do you believe there's a God? And you answer, I don't actively believe, then you're an atheist. And I believe that all, or at least most, agnostics are actually atheists. They're just using a different term. It's kind of like you asking me, are you gay? And me answering, well, I like to bowl. And you go, good, you like to bowl, but I was asking, because I was interested in having sex with you, if you're gay. And you say, well, I'd like to go bowling. And you go, good, let's go bowling. Are we going to have sex afterwards? So I say, do you believe in God? And you say, I'm agnostic. And I go, yeah. We'll go bowling and talk about being agnostic. But do you believe? Do you actively believe? And a lot of times, I get my inspiration from the evangelical Christians, because I believe they're the most honest of the Christians. And they say that to not know is to not believe. If you do not actively believe in Christ, you are not a Christian. I'm willing to go with that too. And so my point is, agnostic in common usage seems to be that there's a continuum, and there's theist, and there's atheist, and there's agnostic right in the middle. That's not what it is. There is theist and agnostic, which is there's theist and atheist, which is a binary system. You either believe in God or you don't. And there's agnostic, which answers how we ascertain a truth of the universe. So I would definitely, if you said, are you agnostic? I would say, sure. There's a lot of stuff we don't know. And then you would say, do you actively believe? I'd say no. And you'd go, atheist.
Yeah, that's a distinction we try to make as well. You know, atheism speaks to what I don't believe. I don't believe in a deity, but agnostic, I don't know that there isn't some nebulous other out there somewhere. Certainly nothing benevolent. You can disprove specific gods, right? I mean, you can. God.
People will say to me, what's your word for someone who doesn't believe in God, but is open-minded to the possibility there could be a God? And I say, well, that word is atheist. Atheist doesn't say, I'm never going to believe in God. Atheist doesn't say, you can't prove to me there's a God. Atheist just says, right at the moment you ask me the question, I don't actively believe in a supreme power in the universe.
So Bill O'Reilly goes on the O'Reilly Factor and said something to the effect of, the reason we see so much gun violence, he's talking about the Virginia shooting of the reporter and the cameraman. And he's linking the shooting, gun violence, the horrors we see on the evening news, to a lack of spiritualism, the fact that we've turned from God. We're now not just non-believers, we're nihilists, we're self-obsessed, and we have no purpose or joy in our lives. I'm screaming at the computer monitor as I'm watching the clip. I don't get how they get that atheists believe in nothing and we have no purpose or joy and don't want to help other people. It's just a huge misstep.
But you're also, I wouldn't even go to the cause and effect problem. I would attack right away the fact that if there's one thing we can prove is that we're getting less violent. We're getting less violent, and we're getting less violent at rates that are happening so fast, people having trouble explaining.
Well, it's hard to sell that, though, in the Twitterverse, whenever the worst of the worst is immediately broadcast around the planet. I'm totally on your page. I've read Pinker's book, The Better Angels of Our Nature.
That's all you need to read. We're done.
It's a masterwork. It's so well documented that we're living in the good old days right now.
Yeah. If you wanted to make the argument O'Reilly needs to be making is God is interceding and making us less violent and making things get better. Because that's the argument that can actually speak to my heart. Because Pinker's book ends up, he makes some guesses, but he ends up going, I don't know why things are getting this good. I don't know. I don't know why things are this good is a very good argument for benevolent supreme being. And yet none of them are making it. They're all making it to we're going to hell in a handbasket. So they've made the reverse argument. If I sat at O'Reilly and he said to me, you know, Penn, you're a hard-ass skeptic. You tell me, why have things gotten so much better since the mid-80s in terms of how people are treated? How many fewer people are dying at the hands of other people? Explain that, Mr. Atheist. I'd go, we're getting nicer. I don't know. He would have me right up against the fucking wall. But when he gets me against the wall and goes, how do you explain this? It's because of your atheism that things are getting so much worse. All I'm going to say is, okay, more atheists, less violence. I'll take that. It's a spurious cause and effect, but I'll take it. If we're going to do TV arguments, I'll take that position.
And the more secular cultures, the more secular nations are, by and large, the more peaceful ones, the hugely religious United States, we're just getting our ass kicked. I mean, we've got all manner of misery happening inside these borders. It's crazy.
Yeah. But and also, you know, atheism is rising very, very quickly. And I think what we're seeing is the very, very unpleasant death throes of religion. You know, it's so clear the direction this is going. You know, the arrow of progress points one way. But it's not going to be pretty.
It's going to get nasty. They seem to be getting desperate. Sort of the wounded animal metaphor comes to mind.
Yeah. But, you know, they're also, it's really hard. It's really, really hard to change one's worldview. You know, my heart is really with them. And I try to make sure, and this is the hardest part, that every discussion I have with someone who's religious, I try to keep saying to myself over and over again, you could be wrong. You could be wrong. You could be wrong. Because if I'm not willing to do that, I shouldn't be talking to them.
You've been very generous with your time. I want to bounce out of religion, atheism, the news of the day for just a second and ask a magic-related or illusion-related question. Do you draw a distinction, magic, illusion? Do you care?
Illusion is the wrong word. Illusion is a terrible, empty word that lacks intellectual content. It is a term of art for things that look one way and are accomplished another way without any intellectual interference. So a mirror trick is an illusion. A lot of your big stage tricks are illusions. What is good about magic is the tricks. That's the intellectual element. And somewhere in the 70s or 80s, someone decided the word illusion, because it was more syllables than trick, was somehow more highfalutin. The highfalutin word is tricks. The low, no content at all, you can just push out on stage and it works, is illusion. So please, call me rip-off artiste, call me trickster, call me magician, but illusionist, leave that for the greasy guy in the tux with a lot of birds torturing women in front of Mylar with bad rip-off small dick Motown music, okay?
I remember back in the late 90s, they had this show on Fox called Breaking the Magician's Code. They brought the guy out with a mask on and he revealed how famous magicians do their tricks. And I actually sat down in front of one of those and I watched it. And I got about, I don't know, halfway through it, 45 minutes through it. And I came to this moment in my, where I thought, I don't want to know this. I don't want to know how the trick is done. I shut the freaking thing off and I refused to watch any of the future episodes. I wanted there to be a mystery to the magic. I wanted to try to figure out. And I always wonder to myself, you know, do people like you and Teller see that? Does it make your life harder? Do you hate their guts and say, what are you doing? You betrayed the entire idea, or do they make you better in some way?
Neither. Because giving away tricks, which we've done, Teller and I have given away tricks, is really, really hard. Because the way you conceal a trick is by making it ugly. If I do a trick by a method that's beautiful, your mind will go to figuring it out. Now, you can have this explained by Einstein or by anybody. We are searching for beauty. We are searching for symmetry. We're searching for an aha moment. Few things feel better in life than the aha of understanding. So that's what we're searching for. And all detective shows on TV give you that. Real detectives don't get the aha. They don't get the, oh, there was a lipstick stain on the cigarette in the ashtray. You did it. You go off to jail. That aha is something we really look for, that pure cause and effect. So when I'm doing a magic trick, I don't want you to figure out, I make it ugly. I make it gaffer's tape. I make it a lie. I make it five things that you can't explain that don't really look together. You said you liked the bullet catch. If I sat down and started to explain it to you in detail, every way we did it, you would stop me, and not because you wanted to keep the mystery, you would stop me because you were so fucking bored. You can find tricks patented on the web. You can go and read that patent for how people fly and stuff like that. And you will not get past the first page. I've done this challenge when I'm doing morning DJ shows, selling our show. And they'll say, you know, I really want to know the tricks are done, Pat. I'd give anything on the tricks are done. I go, here's the Google search to do. Call me tomorrow and tell me how much you enjoyed reading that, because you won't read the whole thing. Well, I'm going to call your bluff, Penn. I'm going to read the whole thing, and I'm going to call you tomorrow. Never. They don't care. The fact of the matter is, giving away tricks that are interesting is really hard. So the masked magician, who's named Valentino, by the way, he's a dove worker in Laughlin. They went to everybody before they got to Valentino and said, do you want to do this show? And everybody said, wait a minute. I'm going to go on TV with a bag over my head? That does not help me get laid. Forget. I cannot make money or get laid with a bag on my head. It's one of the major reasons Miley Cyrus, David Letterman, and Jon Stewart never wore bags over their heads. They wanted to be famous. Wanting to go on TV with a bag over your head is only something an idiot would do. Then they have to give away tricks. But the tricks they give away won't fit in a half-hour show. If I ask you, I want to know everything about how they recorded the Beatles' A Day in the Life. Run every track by me. Oh, by the way, you're going to do that in a minute and a half. No one would take that gig because you're not going to get anything out of it. You can't build a career on it. As a matter of fact, Valentino did a big final show where he unveiled himself and said, this is who I am, and then never worked again. In any sort of national, I think he still does dubs somewhere, but in any sort of national theater. So the tricks they were giving away, they had to oversimplify. And they oversimplified them to the point that they wouldn't work. And then they also didn't have any real professional magicians working with them. So they were getting stuff out of books that were 50, 60 years old. So the only people they were busting was 13-year-old birthday party magicians. The professionals just rolled their eyes. They gave away the bullet catch on the show. And it was wonderful because people came to the show going, well, I've seen that on the mask. Wait a minute. No, that doesn't work. That won't work. What are they doing? They gave away all sorts of stuff that Copperfield was doing in his act. And people would go and see Copperfield's act and go, wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. No, it doesn't work. Also, the huge insult that people were having to books blew my mind. People said, oh, they're giving this away on the television. Well, the truth of the matter is, when I was 15 years old, all this stuff was available by public library. And I'm from a shitty little town with a shitty little library. We had all those books on magic that explained everything. By the way, everything the masked magician would ever give away is available on the web. We do this show called Penn and Teller Fool Us. And the premise is magicians do a trick. If we can figure it out, we win. If we can't figure it out, they win. And I always give my explanations, not telling exactly how the trick is done. But I'm always giving keywords so that the 13, 14, 15-year-old magicians who are like us and want to learn everything, just type that into the web and all the information comes up. So if people like you don't want to know, they just don't type. And if people do want to know, they type. And if they want to know half-assed, they type, it comes up, and they go, geez, this is too much shit, fuck it. Which is what most people do. The truth of the matter is the only secret Teller and I have is how hard we work. We're willing to work 6 years to put in a three-minute bit. And people watch that three-minute bit and go, no one put in 6 years for that piece of shit. You go, yeah, aha, we fooled you.
I'm fascinated by the fact that I can be so curious and skeptical about so many other things. I want to know. I want to get to the root of it. I want to know the origins of it. I want to know how it works. Give me the nuts and bolts. When it comes to what you do, I want to be ignorant. I just want to go and have a good time.
And the reason is you can have a good time because it doesn't matter. And that's the beauty of it. The beauty of it is you can, a skeptic can enjoy being fooled by a magic show because the stakes are so low. A skeptic cannot enjoy being fooled by a quack because the stakes are so high.
Penn, you look great. How much weight you lost?
About 105 pounds.
And how was that done exactly?
Magic.
I'm sure that had to be the answer. No, I mean, come on. Are you running? Are you doing some specific thing? What?
I lost a lot of weight, and I lost it by, very simply, no animal products, no refined grains, very low salt, sugar, and fat. And my goal was to not lose weight. That was a byproduct. My goal was to fix my blood pressure and get off some of the drugs.
Just be healthier overall and looking good is an incidental part of that, man.
Overall, but blood pressure was the real issue for me. For others, it's diabetes. For me, it was blood pressure.
So you've been at it for decades, right? And you have been in so many different incarnations of so many different shows, of so many different tricks over all of this time. You ever think, hey, I'm going to hang it up and call it a day? Or are you going to be Randy at the age of 80, whatever, and still just as busy then as you are now?
Well, you know, some people famously, Jon Stewart, Johnny Carson, David Letterman, retire at the top of their game. And no one ever gets to see them deteriorate. Others, like maybe Sinatra, although I would never say that if he were alive, but Sinatra, maybe some others, maybe Crosby, Stills, and Nash, keep performing after they're past their game. I intend to be in the latter category. I intend to keep performing, not just until I suck, but well into suckdom.
Bring the hook, man. You're going to have to drag my ass off the stage.
I intend to die in office. Tiny Tim died on stage in Minneapolis doing Tiptoe Through the Tulips. I'm fine with that. I don't care how shitty we get. I want to keep going. I love what I do.
Penn will be speaking with Teller at ApostaCon on the 18th of September.
With Penn.
Teller is going to be speaking, doing more of the... You know, I saw Teller... And he was doing a sit down. He was on stage. I don't even know where it was. I just stumbled upon it on YouTube. And I was mesmerized.
He's fabulous.
The guy is brilliant. And he's so thoughtful and so well-spoken. And so on top of the, you know, being jarred by the fact that I'm hearing a voice come out of him, I was just amazed at how unbelievably thoughtful and well-spoken. What a great communicator. How much he had to say.
He's very articulate. Very erudite. He's wonderful to hear speak.
The event is at apostacon.org. I believe there are still tickets available. Penn Jillette, for everything you are and everything you're about and just the way you've done it, so much style, so much skill at entertaining people and getting people to think while they're laughing and being just a little bit shocked. That's a gift few people have. You're amazing at it. Thank you for being who you are and doing what you do.
See you at Apostacon. So
all right, we'll see you then. Thanks so much for listening tonight. Don't forget, on Tuesday of next week, I'll be talking to atheist minister Greta Vosper about what's going on at her church in Toronto. That's coming up in a week. Thanks again to NatureBox for being tonight's show sponsor. Over 100 delicious and healthy snacks that they deliver right to your door. And if you act now, your first box of NatureBox snacks is on them. Just check them out online, naturebox.com. NatureBox.com/thinkingatheist. NatureBox.com/thinkingatheist.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. Watch dozens of original videos on The Thinking Atheist YouTube channel. And visit our website for resources, links, contact information, the editor's blog, and more. TheThinkingAtheist.com.